Good morning and welcome to Tech Central TCS Plus podcast. My name is Kevin Smith, and this morning I'm joined by Claire Loveridge, the Vice President and General Manager for the EMEA region, as well as Jason Noli from Arctic Wolf, and Jason is the Sales Manager for the region. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You guys are no strangers to the Tech Central TCS Plus podcast. You've been here before. Claire, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
I was going to say, sunny South Africa, but as we discussed earlier, not so much sun.
Yeah, we'll not talk about the weather.
We won't talk about the weather. Have you had a good, is it a good stay? Have you engaged?
Look, it's always a good stay when we come down here. You know, it's really hard when you build regions, especially when you put teams in places as remote as South Africa, because you can't just pop on a plane and come down. So when we come down, ordinarily it's for a week, and we really try and do as much as we can with stuff like this, seeing customers, seeing prospects, spending time with partners. We're 100% channel, so building those relationships is vital. And I think out of everywhere we go, it's the relationships that you build here are so strong. So you get to have some fun at the same time. It's not all work.
No, that's good. We must always have fun. And Jason's probably got a long to-do list.
He's always got a long to-do list.
Keep him busy.
Keep you busy. No, good. Yeah, I think, you know, we're going to tackle a very complicated but interesting topic this morning. But as we were chatting outside, you know, I think as an industry, as a cybersecurity industry, we've, done well at promoting that cybersecurity is not a technical issue. You know, it's a business imperative, and I'm sure you guys would agree with me. And I think, you know, from my personal view, I've seen that the likes of organizations, boards, who we've been kind of screaming out and saying, guys, we are, you need to listen to us. I think they have been listening. And I think, you know, we've seen budgets being allocated. We've seen the fact that, you know, companies that did not have CISOs and ISOs and that type of thing, there has been some effort put into either appoint people or outsource that function to give it the focus that us as a cybersecurity industry has been asking for. But we know that the threat actors and the threat landscape is dynamic and it moves at a pace that we sometimes, us and our clients, find ourselves wanting, that it's moving faster than we can actually keep up. And that's what we're going to be discussing this morning. You know, how do we minimize that gap between cybersecurity protection and the business reality of, I've spent this money now, you know, I've thrown resources at it, it's on our agenda at a board level, but yet I'm still feeling uncomfortable. So, but before we get into the meat of it, I think we are going to be referring to the Arctic Wolf threat report for 2026. Can we maybe just start off, and can you guys just give us a bit of a background, how it was put together and so forth?
Just before we do that, can I just touch on something you started with? Because I think it's really interesting. So you touched on the maturity of the market and where the market is. And I think if you look at the pace that not only the threat actors and cybersecurity is changing at and evolving, and we'll talk about the threat report and what we're seeing in the market, I think you'd be surprised at how many organizations still haven't invested in protection. So, you know, we've been in EMEA as a region for 5 years now. We've been in South Africa for three and a half. And we've gone through some real changes during that time. You know, even 5 years ago, you would see players like CrowdStrike and a lot of the other bigger vendors as well as service providers already in the market offering services to protect against cybersecurity. But there were still a lot of conversations with customers around, well, I've been okay so far, so why would I need to spend money on something that hasn't actually affected me? And I think across the entire region, but particularly in South Africa, I think it's fair to say that it's changing, but it's still not where you would think it would be. There are still, I would say, way more than 50% of organizations who haven't invested in security specifically for cyber. So they may think that antivirus is protection enough, or endpoint is going to get them covered. But as we're going to talk about, the cybersecurity market is constantly evolving and changing. You know, it's not a tool solution. It's not a project. It's something that you have to keep looking at. But you would be really surprised at how many organizations still don't see that it needs to be a board level conversation and it needs to be something that does keep people awake at night, because the threat isn't there. It's not an if, it's absolutely a when.
Most definitely.
Yeah, and maybe to add context to that, I mean, like you mentioned that there's CISOs and ISOs and that sort of thing in a lot of the market. What we find in that mid-market, smaller enterprise in South Africa, sometimes there isn't. You've got IT people that are doing security and IT. There's no specific security focus. And but what we have seen is that there's becoming this requirement, especially in probably in the last 6 months, there's become this requirement around, it's at board level. They're starting to talk around it. We got customers that we spoke to 2 years ago starting to come back to us and go, right, this is something we need to do. So I think we have been quite immature in the way we tackle cybersecurity. Yes, they may have, a lot of customers we speak to may have one or two tools, but the actual overarching security strategy, I think, is where the challenge has been. And we're starting to see that dynamically change, which is positive. It's positive for us, obviously, but I think it's just positive for the market that we're starting to see it taken more seriously.
Yeah. No, thank you for that clarification. I didn't realize that, you know, there's still that gap. But at least we can see that, you know, there's some effort going into it. Correct. We just now need to understand, okay, cool, is your effort that you, as a client, or an end user putting into it, is it addressing the gap? And correct. I think that's what we're going to dig into this morning. So thank you for that. So, yeah, just back to the Optical 2026 report, if you can just give us a bit of a background there.
Yeah, so, I mean, we've... On our website, there's a whole lot of reports and stuff. We release multiple reports across the year. The one we're going to talk around and we'll touch on is our threat report, which is really our incident response business. And it's any cases that have gone to a full incident response case within our business in Arctic Wolf around what we've seen and what we typically seen as threats, predictions, all that sort of thing. So it's real world information around what's happening from a global perspective, and it relates to everywhere across the world, because as you know, threats don't specifically relate to certain regions. It's a global threat, but it's real cases that we've worked on and what we typically seen in the marketplace.
Perfect.
Then we also will release probably later on this year a SecOps report, which is more focused around our SOC services and what we've seen in that landscape. And the good thing is it's an open document that people can go and see and just get intelligence out of it. That's the idea, is build awareness around what's happening in the market. So those are the typically reports that we look at.
Absolutely. It's not a sales tool. You know, that's not what this is about at all. This is about looking at what we've seen across all of our customers or customers that have come to us for help with an incident. As well as using the telemetry from the platform and using Arctic Wolf Labs, putting all of that together to be able to give organizations an insight into what's happening in the market. You know, is it still ransomware? Well, the answer is yes. Is it business email compromise? Yes, they're still there. But then you've got things like data incidents, which has gone crazy. And this is about the threat actors looking just to infiltrate organizations to take the data. So it gives organizations an understanding of what's happening in real world incidents today.
Yeah, and also some of those tactics from those threat actors.
Exactly that.
Correct.
Which is interesting. Cool. So just in terms of the report, you know, if we can maybe just discuss what's actually happening. You know, we sometimes think we isolated to this region, this African region. You know, what's happening in Europe doesn't happen in South Africa or Africa. And we see, you mentioned two or three of those indicators of compromise that, you know, we may see. But let's get into the relevancy of that. You know, business email compromise, you guys have solutions around that. You have training around that. So, you know, it was a big issue 3 years ago. Is it still such a big issue?
It is, right? And what's interesting is when you start looking at, and you actually go through the report and you look at where the risk areas are and where the biggest concerns, ransomware is always number one, right? It's been for the last 3 years. Business email compromises there. But then when you start looking at industries, it changes, right? So for business email compromise, finance and FSI is the top industry at risk when it comes to that. When we talk around non-business email compromise cases, it's manufacturing, it's legal, it's government, it's those sort of areas. So it depends on the type of attack. And I think what's important to understand is just because it's business email compromise doesn't mean it doesn't lead to ransomware. So they're all interlinked to each other. And the idea is, yes, we've got solutions around all these sort of things. But what's interesting is in this report, a lot of these customers don't have OctaCore. They're not using OctaCore. So they've come to us to help them get their business back up and running. Because when we're talking around what's happening with this, it's typically after the fact. They've been breached. They need help. And there's got to be this balance around, yes, I've got to cover that. And we'll talk around risk just now, I'm sure. But it's around building proactive protection, but having that safety net as well around what we can do around it.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the risk now. I mean, we, you know, as being in the industry, it's always, we always try and find out what the client's appetite for risk is. And we know a lot of the time, the guys we speak to have, you know, their appetite versus the budget that's allocated is not necessarily aligned. But we do know that you guys run a platform and you can meet your client at any point in their journey. So you spoke about the IR service and you spoke about, you know, you can engage you from a SOC perspective. So, and how's that been working for you guys? I mean, you've been putting this platform together over the last couple of years. You know, it is modular, even though you'd like guys to come in and consume everything. You know, where are you seeing the traction? Where are you seeing understanding clients' appetite and then saying to you, okay, right, let's start off in this area, being the SOC? Because IR, they're going to call you when they're in trouble.
Yeah,
right?
So what's interesting, I think you've got to almost step back. For customers, they've got to understand that risk piece, which is... it's quite hard for a lot of customers if they haven't had an incident or they haven't had any challenges. But you've got to break it down. We always look at it around, you've got to look at a customer's total risk. And how do we break that down? So you break it down, you've got to go, right, I need to assess my risk and I need to understand what that is. So but the way I assess that is I need to probably align what I have and build a baseline against a global framework to understand where the gaps are.
Okay.
Then I need to build a process or consumer service that helps mitigate the risk. And that's got to be twofold. You've got to have the detection response capabilities, which is really important, but it's all reactive, right? So I wait for something to happen and then I do something. But you've got to wrap that with the proactive piece around working together with customers and us working together to make sure we're constantly improving security posture, hardening the environment, because those two work hand in hand. But as you'll know, Kevin, there's no silver bullet in cybersecurity, right? There's always going to be that residual risk. But the goal around cybersecurity is to get that residual risk to such a small level that you can transfer that risk around warranties and insurances.
Yeah.
And that's how you combat cyber risk in an organization. But we've got all these different solutions that fit in different areas, and we can meet a customer where they are today. But it's fundamentally working with a customer to understand the problem. And to your point, we've seen that a lot where the individuals and the businesses that we deal with, they understand the risk. But when it gets to the board level, is how do we make that tangible? And we work with customers around that to try and show the financial risk, but also the financial benefit of doing these things. Because that's the important part, right? It's not about just risk. It's around what's the value and how to mitigate a lot of that risk for the organization.
And it's about being proactive rather than reactive. Because, you know, being reactive is responding to a ransomware event probably when it's too late.
Or when
you breach. Far more costly. You know, it's damaging to organizations in so many ways other than just cost. So you can either be reactive and understand the problem when it hits you, or you can be proactive and understand where your risk is and do something about it. You can't react to what you can't see. You can't fix what you don't know. So you either wait until the problem is there or do something about it in advance so that you're continually assessing and hardening and monitoring and learning and improving, because it's a continuous cycle. It never ends. You have to go on a journey with cybersecurity and make sure you're completely evolving, because the threats They're not static. Mm. They're constantly evolving and constantly changing. So you need to work with somebody, with a partner who will understand how those threats are evolving. And that's through seeing threats in Africa. It's through seeing threats in Australia. Mm. You've got to have a global presence to understand what really is going on out there and work with a partner to be able to improve your posture.
No, it's interesting. You did mention the warranty, and we're going to spend some time, dedicated time on it a bit later, because it is a fairly new addition to your offering. But before we get there, I'm always interested in, the skill shortage, the talent pool that we've got. And I think within your solution, you address or complement organizations, because the last time I checked, and I haven't checked for a while, but, depending on which analyst report you read, there was globally a shortage of between 1.5 and 2 million. I don't know, if we've closed that gap slightly. What are you guys seeing out there in terms of the clients, and how are you augmenting that skills gap?
So I'll talk from a local perspective, but globally it's a massive problem. Mm. Right? But I'm sure you can understand locally it compounds the issue. Mm. There's not a lack of interest in skills. There's not a lack of talent, if you want to call it. Mm. There's just a lack of resource of people that are actually skilled to do these things. Mm. But what's interesting is for the large organizations, a lot of them, they have the budgets, they have the ability to bring in the right people to look after the environment. For the smaller mid-market, it's very hard to find security skill. It's also very hard to retain security skill, right? And I'll give you an example. We had a partner that we worked with. Their security skill started consulting overseas, making a lot more money, and they write their own invoices. Mm. The challenge that we've got in the market is we just don't have enough resource to be able to build it. And for the mid-market, it's actually just not cost-effective. So the way we look at combating this is for a lot of the, like I said, a lot of the customers that we chat to, they don't have security skill. They don't even have a security person. So we take away and we do a lot of the heavy lifting where we focus on doing the investigations and all that sort of thing for the customer, mm-hmm. and then present back to them the risk, the outcome. And that outcome, we then work with them on mitigating that risk in the organization. So the goal here is that you actually don't need a high-end security skill. You just need somebody to go and do the task in that organization. Mm. And it's really important because if you take away the noise, the customer can then focus on what's actually important, what the risk is, rather than trying to manage all of the cybersecurity aspect of the logs and the information and all that. And that's the biggest challenge that you run into. And that's probably the hardest part of trying to get the right skills, because you want the right people looking at the right things at the right time.
Yeah.
The average tenure for a security analyst was 18 to 24 months. Mm. And this was a global stat that came out a while ago. So hiring's one problem. Retention is the bigger problem because there is such a need for talent. So you consider the time it takes to bring somebody in, to train them up, to get them skilled in not only what your requirements are, because every organization's requirements are different, but also how your organization works. And then you're on a cycle of continuing to do that a year later. It's costly, it's time consuming, and it affects the business. So the skill shortage is hiring the right people's problem number one, but because of that shortage, I would say retention of talent is number two. And that's been a really important thing for us. We've got over 1,000 security analysts, really highly trained technical individuals. And we work really hard on training, on educating, on advancing the teams that we keep internally, because retention is huge.
It's huge, yeah. Mm. Now, it's interesting because, when a platform player like yourself come into play, there's always, okay, so what, are you going to create some jobs? Mm. And what I'm hearing is that you're saying, guys, we'll take some of the heavy lifting away, but there's still a need to localize tasks. Correct. And that's where you need people in the organization that understand the culture. So it's a good channel model right through to the end user. And we can still create some local talent and then hopefully feed it back into the 1,000-odd pool that is available at Arctic.
They'll naturally learn from the process as well, which is beneficial.
100%. So that's always a good thing. And then you can't have any cybersecurity or any technology discussion today without mentioning AI. So, you know, it's on the threat actor side, on the defender side, you know, we both using AI. What are you guys seeing out there in the market?
AI and automation is taking the average time for compromise down from days and hours to minutes. And by using AI, they're managing to completely bypass encryption and go straight for data in a very, very quick time. AI has become the number one concern in the market right now. So whilst ransomware is the number one risk, or you know what we see most incidents caused by, organizations' biggest concern now is AI. That's locally and across the whole region.
One of those things that you, it's just a global thing, whether you like it or not, it's here.
And you touched on it, right? AI is on both sides. For me, AI is really important to make a lot of things more efficient when you talk around what we do and the good side of cybersecurity. It's around making the SOC more efficient, looking for risk quicker, all those sort of things. But it's also around using that to go and look for new risk on the web, on the dark web, in the market, and dynamically build protection engines and mitigation against that. So you've got to, I think they've got to work hand in hand. But you still need, as much as AI is really important, a really key aspect of cybersecurity, you still got to have that human element. Because the human element brings the business context in around the risk.
And you're still dealing with humans at the end of the day.
Correct.
So on to, you know, you guys have your mission statement, which is to end cyber risk. It's a bold and ambitious. And if we look at any report, we'll see that, you know, we can't really say that we're there now. We've ended cyber risk. And there's a lot to do in that space. But, you know, if we just look at if you look at your mission statement, and now we're going to go into one of the new additions being your warranty. You know, what have you added on to your stack to assist you in ending cyber risk?
So, yes, we've got the warranty that we'll talk around. When we spoke a bit earlier, it's understanding that risk profile for the organization. And we talk, it is a big statement, ending cyber risk, but it's got to take is multiple aspects to it. So yes, we've got to reduce our risk footprint down to a very small level. But there's always going to be, like I said, that residual risk. And that's how we cover it. Yes, you may have cyber insurance, but this is where the warranty comes in. So it helps cover the deductible that a lot of these cyber insurance companies have. It helps cover off that should you incur an incident, how quickly can you recover? How quickly can you get your business back up and running? Because we always talk around cybersecurity is a game of speed. Right. So it's around reducing the risk and then using these aspects to cover off any of that residual risk. And that's how you look at ending cyber risk across an organization. You're never going to stop risk, but you're looking at ending the risk profile and reducing that risk profile for an organization.
Okay. Yeah, it's all about reducing the likelihood and the impact of a threat.
So just if we just look at it practically, if we take a typical incident, you've notified and it's a positive incident, you, from the time that you start your war room, you know, get your PR ready, get your legal guys ready to notify the regulators, and your playbooks are all spread across the boardroom tables. Maybe just give us a bit of a practical step where the warranty would come in, because you mentioned that, you know, even getting involved in dealing with negotiations, should there be a negotiations with the threat actors. So what, give us some of the items that you would help, or what the warranty would cover.
So there's a couple things. It's really a lot of issues that stem from a cyber risk. So covering ransomware attacks, covering the cost of ransomware attacks, business email compromise, legal liability, all these sort of things. So a lot of the time when companies take insurance, it doesn't cover all of that risk. So they'll cover certain things, but we can use that to fund business income loss and those sort of things if it stemmed from a cyber crime. So the goal here is to make sure we understand it's not cyber insurance or warranty. It's both working together. And it's covering off the risk that potentially you haven't catered for that you can now cover. So maybe funding to try and get the information to write to the information regulator and report it. is using those sort of aspects and those funds to cover off a lot of that risk for the organization.
Okay.
But the key thing I think that we need to understand is it's not about the warranty as much. It's about the risk. Mm. And it's about making sure that we are getting the business back up and running as quickly as possible to a pre-incident state. That's what it's there for.
Okay. And how does the client qualify for to get the warranty?
So when they take on board our services, mm-hmm. they qualify for a certain warranty aspect.
Okay.
Right. But obviously, the more they take of our components and our service offerings, we have more investment, we have more interest, we have more view, mm-hmm. so we can give more coverage.
Okay.
So we all go all the way from $100,000 all the way up to $3 million worth of coverage.
Okay.
And it doesn't matter what size customer you are. I think this is the challenge that we've seen in the market, specifically around warranties. A lot of the time, if you're a small customer, you get small warranty. If you're a big customer, you get big warranty. But the risk is still the same for all organizations. So the idea, the way we do it, is having more coverage of your environment, we provide more coverage around warranty cover for our customer.
So the more footprint you have, the bigger the warranty,
exactly,
or the bigger
that
you qualify for a warranty. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So essentially it's us standing behind and saying, look, we really believe in the Aurora platform and we believe in the security operations approach to help protect you and mitigate you against risk. And because of that, we're going to offer you a warranty should something happen to help support the organization.
Okay. And I think we on to our closing question. And from my side, you know, if there's a listener out there that's listened to this and, you know, wanting advice, and we know they can contact you, but listening to you, listening to, you know, the insights that you've given today, what is that one first step that you advise them to take?
It's an interesting question, right? And I think we run into it quite a bit. My response to that would be do something, mm-hmm. right? I think far too many times we talk to customers and what we hear a lot of, Kevin, is I don't know what I don't know, mm-hmm. which is frightening.
Yeah.
But I always say to a customer, if you don't take what I do, do something, right? Just have a look at your environment. You've got to take it a lot more seriously than I think we have been. There is, and it's about, it's not just going and buying something and putting it in place. You need to find a partner that's going to work with you, because you can very easily excessively spend on cybersecurity. So you want to get a partner that can help you build efficiency into your cybersecurity spend. So yes, I've got these components in place, but working with you to focus on where you should be spending and pushing budget to get the best value out of your cybersecurity strategy. That's where I would sort of focus it.
You have to find a way to understand your risk profile. You have to understand where the gaps are. Because if you don't know, you can't protect. You can't do anything about it. And I think too many organizations think they'll buy a tool, it'll fix the problem. Buy a tool, walk away. It's done, it's safe. It's absolutely not. Because off the back of that, you still have to have people to manage the tools and make sure the patches are being updated and make sure that everything is implemented. So you have to understand your risk. So if you're going to start anywhere, for me, it would be find a way to understand where the gaps are so that you can start to formulate a plan about how to protect yourself. Don't do nothing.
Don't do nothing.
Don't wait until it's too late, because the damage will be too great.
Mm.
And there's too many organizations, I think, that still do that.
Yeah. So we're saying acknowledge, take responsibility, do some research, read the Article 2026 report, and then find a partner that can assist you.
Correct.
Guys, if there's nothing else, I just want to say thank you for being with us this morning. Klee, I know you're a Newcastle supporter. Good luck tonight. You're playing against my team. I wish you well. But thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Kevin.